Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 449. Matthew Meyer and I will be coming to Seattle on Friday, December 13th. You have to say it that way. I think legally you're supposed to say it that way. Friday the 13th. We're going to be at the Showbox in Seattle. Go to nerdist.com/calendar. I think there's only a couple tickets left, so do it fast. And we will see you there in Seattle. I'd like to thank Stamps.com for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. The holidays are here. The post offices are packed. You don't want to go... And you have a ton of presents and things, hopefully, that you're going to be sending out to people. You can't carry all that crap to the post office. So go to Stamps.com, sign up for an account, print out the exact postage you need, and then your mail carrier will come pick up those packages from you, and you will never need to... not only set foot in a post office, but you don't need to leave your house either. So there's always the no-risk trial, $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale up to $55 of free postage when you use the promo code Nerdist. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Nerdist. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist. This episode is Lindy Ortega, who I love. I discovered her... on the radio, which is something they still listen to in England. I discovered her on the radio 2 years ago when I was there shooting stuff for the Nerdist TV show. There was this little Christmas song came on. I was there in December. It was called Christmas Eve With You. And it was so delightful that I sent it back to Skydart. And I said, this is a really delightful song that you would love. And then we both fell in love with the album, Little Red Boots. And she's great. There's sort of a country-esque, old-timey sound. She has a fantastic voice. She also has a new album out called Cigarettes and Truck Stops. And so we kind of became pals via Facebook. And I said, if you're in Los Angeles, whenever that may be, let's podcast you. So she said, sure. We went to Swing House Studios. We chatted for a little bit. And then she played a song and sounded amazing. So here she is, Lindy Ortega, on the Nerdist Podcast, number 449. Music Discovery Day. Oh, that's too close to Friday the 13th. Boy, I think those two guys are related. Music Discovery, Friday the 13th. We should talk more.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
So
that it doesn't feel like a weird job interview.
Can I talk like this? Is that strange?
Yeah. No, just grab on. Hold on.
like a muscle man?
Yeah, just okay. Hold on like a muscle man. We could arm wrestle through the entire podcast.
I'm into that.
Would that be weird?
Yeah, no, that'd be awesome.
Are you guys recording over there? It is happening, Lindy Ortega. It's happening. I'm going to go into airplane mode or podcast mode. So we don't get interrupted. But it's good to see you, and it's really exciting to have you on the podcast. I discovered you in London like almost 2 years ago.
London, England.
London, England. I was shooting some stuff for BBC over there, and I was in a production van, and they were just listening to the radio, which is something we don't really do in Los Angeles because we don't... It's a big city, but there's not a lot of radio that I would want to just sit and listen to. And but, you know, England is very progressive, and they have good radio music. And they played one of your Christmas songs. And I instantly
I Shazammed the shit out of it. And then bought the Tennessee Christmas.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, bought the Tennessee Christmas album. Cool. And it was one of those situations where I was like, every song, I was like, oh, this one's awesome. Oh, shit, this one's awesome. And then, of course, bought the next album. And then you sent me the third album that I have of yours.
Yeah, awesome.
So anyway, I don't know much about you at all. That's why we're here to find out. I want people to know who you are because they should listen to you. So tell me, where are you from? Let's start at the beginning.
The outer reaches of the galaxy.
Oh, that's
basically
really awesome. Well, thank you for coming to our planet.
I beamed myself down. I'm
space
from,
music.
Right. I'm from Toronto, Canada.
Yes.
Canada,
yes.
Initially. Yeah. And now I live now in Nashville, Tennessee.
Did that happen after Rob Ford?
No.
Oh, okay. That happened before.
Yeah.
Okay,
I've escaped all that crazy, but I hear I get wind of it sometimes, but... Yeah, I've been living in Nashville for 2 years.
Now, I did know you were Canadian, but I don't... So what is the country scene like in Toronto? What did you...
hence the move. Not a big country scene in Toronto. I mean, it's... I think it's starting to be more accepted now than it was when I was making music. So, there's it's more accepted. But I just thought I should be in Nashville where all my country music heroes have either... you know, rolled through and spent time there, pissed it off or whatever, whatever people do. There's a lot of history that's undeniable. So.
Oh, there's no question. I'm from Memphis, so I know, right. I know Tennessee. And
there's no history in Memphis.
No, there's no,
none.
It's like we're
absolutely
trying to catch up to Nashville. I love Memphis, but Nashville is sort of like a smaller, slightly cleaner Memphis.
Yeah.
In a sort of a
lot
way.
Cleaner.
it's a little bit cleaner. I mean, there's definitely... You know, like downtown Memphis has a lot of history, and of course Beale Street's very touristy. Not that Nashville's not doesn't have its tourist strip,
oh,
but
it definitely
it's just
does.
You know, in Nashville, just walking. What's the street? The main drag?
Broadway.
Just walking into your random bar there and seeing fucking world class musicians just jamming. It's pretty mind blowing.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's very inspiring, which is part of the reason as well why I moved. Move there. I sound like Tammy Wynette on a bender right now. I'm sorry. That's what touring does to your voice.
No, you got to you got to do the drawl if you want to sound like Tammy.
Oh, yeah.
Real sorry right now.
I'm real sorry that my voice sounds like this, but I was out partying and drinking last night.
See, that's what people want to hear from the country lifestyle. It's so funny is that when you think about the 70s where everyone was just way strung out and on all barbiturates and booze that...
I just need some barbiturates, really. Then I'll be all right.
Just you need some barbiturates. I don't know what barbiturates are. I just know that that was a thing in the 70s that they warned us about in school.
Right.
Like, don't take barbiturates.
Sounds cool.
It sounds like a fucked up thing to do to yourself. It sounds like a drug that makes your lip heavy or everything just sounds like this.
Yeah.
But when you realize that, I don't know how those people toured and did all those drugs and did all that, because you really have to focus and have your wits about you.
You do now when people are YouTubing everything you do, so it's a little different. I mean, back then, if you had a crappy show, it took a little while for it to get around, you know. Now it's like right on online. So
as an artist, do you feel like there's more pressure because you're essentially always performing for the world?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, you're always, like, it doesn't matter if you have a cold or whatever, like, nobody cares about that. It goes up online, and it's there, and there's nothing you could do about it.
Does that make it harder for you to try out new stuff? If you want to make sure, like, oh, I want to try this out, but I don't want anyone to, you know, if it isn't amazing right away, I don't want to give the wrong impression.
Well, we tried out a new song last night, so I don't know. There's something endearing about it sometimes when you have an audience that's accepting of you trying things out, and they like it because they feel like they're part of it, you know. So
yeah,
we did a duet last night that was a lot of fun, kind of like a almost like Jackson, you know, the Johnny Cash, June Carter Cash.
Yep.
It's kind of that vibe, and it was great. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but it was a lot of fun.
First of all, your ultimate plan, of course, is to go back to Toronto and smart bomb a country music scene. Like, you have to bring it back to Toronto at some point.
Maybe. I don't know where I'm going to end up. You know,
that's a country lifestyle right there. See? You don't know.
I'm a tumbleweed.
A tumbleweed that might hop a train with a bindle staff and just get off and start playing a show somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
How are people, I mean, now there's, you know, there's not really an MTV for artists. There's, I mean, I guess there's, you know, Vevo, or you can put videos online. But what is your main way of getting out there now?
Touring.
Just touring.
Bringing myself physically to the people and putting on a really great show and hoping that they'll tell their friends. So next time I roll around, there'll be a bigger crowd. And word of mouth has been really the biggest thing. And I have a great label who's really stuck by me and helped me do my thing. And it's been awesome.
So when you're doing with country music, obviously, you know, there are standards that you can play, and there's certainly, I feel like a lot of people start with standards and then sort of spin off of there to kind of figure out what their voice is or what it is that they want to say. So when you decided, like, hey, country music is definitely the thing that kind of drives me, what was it that you wanted to say?
Well, you know, I didn't really think about it. When I'm writing songs, I just right from my own experiences. 95% of my songs, besides the ones about burying people in the backyard, are from my own experiences. And so I don't really think about what's going to sound really country or whatnot. And my love of country really stems from my mom's love of country. So I grew up listening to it, and she just made me fall in love with all things Southern. And I know it's weird because I'm from Toronto, and I shouldn't have this deep love for it, but I do, and I can't really explain it. Part of it's just sort of innate, I guess.
You were just called.
I was called by the country winds.
Because there's definitely, you know, I hear a lot of different kinds of country influence in there too. I hear sure. A little bit of, there's a little rockabilly, there's a little bluegrassy, there's a little bit of traditional country, and so is there a specific subgenre that you really feel like speaks to you the most, or do you just kind of like pull from whatever?
I just pull from everything that inspires me, and it just comes out like that. So yeah, it's not something where I'm like, I'm gonna go more like this and more like that or whatever. I just do what I do, and I don't really know how to explain it, but I just love country. I love all kinds of country, but I also love blues and soul and rock and roll, all the classic stuff, anything, you know, that sort of preceded the 80s.
Do you feel like you have to be somewhat miserable to write good country songs? I mean, so much of it is like dealing with tragedy and dealing with sadness and dealing with loss and... You know, do you feel like that's important for country music?
I guess. A lot of people. I said preceding. I meant to say post 80s. That always correct myself there. I don't think about it. I feel like I draw. I was a daughter of two immigrant parents growing up in Toronto. My mom Irish, my dad Mexican.
And, whoa.
Yeah. So
how did they find each other?
They crashed
in Canada.
They crashed into each other on a skating rink in City Hall in Toronto, and then they made me. And
was that a result of the crash?
I guess
like they
so.
Crashed really hard. Yeah. I was like, I'm sorry, I think you might be pregnant now.
Yeah, well, this, you know, I do come from outer space, so they needed a vessel, and yeah, but yeah, I just I was lonely, I guess, growing up because I was an only child. I didn't have brothers or sisters, and it's kind of weird. I was kind of a loner in school. I got bullied when I was in elementary school. So
in Canada,
yeah, it happens everywhere.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, so I know they say Canadians are so nice, and they are, but I was bullied, and so I draw from those feelings, I guess, and put them into my music because I feel like loneliness is inherent to the human condition, and we all go through it. So I write about it because I don't want everybody to feel lonely all the time, and hopefully if they know that I feel it too, that they know that it's being human, and it's not just them going through it.
How many nights, how many weeks a year are you touring? Is it pretty nonstop?
I'm touring all the time, yeah. I think I tour like six to 8 months out of the year.
Is it intimidating to go to a city like Nashville where you know that, I mean, I guess it's sort of similar to if you're an actor, you go to Los Angeles, and it's like, oh, there's a fucking million and a half actors. Like, how do you sort of squeeze into the scene, and how do you kind of plant your flag as like, no, but here's, I'm different because of this reason?
Well, I just massacre everybody. And
oh, wow, so you killed everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, not at all. For me, moving to Nashville was mostly a history lesson. I wanted to go where the history was and retrace the steps and go to the Country Music Hall of Fame and the Opry and learn about things. And I already had a team assembled before I moved to Nashville, so it wasn't about getting a record deal or getting agents or anything like that. And it was really just a change of scenery and just a challenge to myself to see if I could do it, to see if I could leave all my comforts and at home in my country and just start somewhere fresh and new and see if it was possible. And so it was a challenge to myself.
How do you force yourself to write when you don't feel like writing?
I never force it. I feel like forcing it never yields any good results. So I just let it hit me. And if it's not hitting me at a certain moment, I just put it away and come back to it when it feels more natural.
Do you feel like music is the main relationship in your life?
Oh, yeah, absolutely it is. Yeah. Yeah, but it's great. I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Is there anything else that you want to do, or would
yes.
you, what else?
I want to chase tornadoes.
You want to be a tornado chaser?
I do. I'm so nerdy for that. Yes.
That's fantastic. Have you tried to chase any tornadoes?
Sometimes I make people and go in their cars because I don't drive, so that's like the first, I guess, thing that I need to do in order to chase a tornado. But I've been out with friends and a storm system is rolling through and I hear about some mesocyclonic rotation and I'm like, we got to get on that. We got to chase that supercell. It's heading north-northeast.
You're driving some serious
it's got really strong wind shear.
Awesomeness right now. Do you understand that I think you could probably do a whole album and you have you ever thought about writing about a literal tornado, but then just letting people think that it's about love or a relationship or whatever?
Maybe I do. Maybe
what? Is that what's happening?
Maybe. I can't reveal my secrets.
Oh, my God. If I could convince you to do anything, even though you don't know me, if I could convince you to do one thing, it would be to write like a country song. My best friend and I wrote a series of country songs. I had a comedy band, and we wrote a series of country songs because I'm from the South. I already told you that. But it was about, basically they were country songs about science. Because no, there had not been country songs about science.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So we wrote about a lot of things. We wrote about...
thermonucleosis.
What did we write about? Well, we wrote a song called Death of the King, which is all about the literal process that happens when a body dies.
Oh, wow.
But through the lens of Elvis Presley.
Nice.
Which Elvis fans were very upset at.
Oh.
But he died.
Yeah.
We gotta let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And then we wrote another song that was about the carbon cycle. Country music, it feels like such a great way to express all that stuff. So if you can do it, I would beg you to write a literal meteorology song, a tornado song.
Sure.
And just have it be super science-y.
What could we rhyme with mesocyclonic rotation?
See,
it's not that easy.
Harmonic of love nation.
Yes, that's great.
That's not great.
We'll put it all together.
There's mesocyclonic rotation is not in that rhyming dictionary.
No, I know. It's hard. It's hard to do it. But I'm going to do it. I'll do it for you.
Will you please do
Absolutely,
that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm telling you that the nerds would go apeshit because if there's one thing that's really great, it's a song that's about something that's science-y, and then it's actually a good song at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think your voice singing a tornado song.
I'm really concerned about it. I want to impress the nerds, because I feel like I am a nerd. Look at me. I'm dressed as a nerd right now for you.
No. But do you really feel that way? You really feel that way?
I've always been a nerd. I am a nerd, for sure.
So what was it that made you feel that way when you were growing up?
Well, I was never cool. I was never cool at school. And I was an outsider, and I was obsessed with storms, and I was a goofy, dorky. Is dorky a word? Yeah.
Yep, dorky's a word. Yeah, so those are all sort of the, you feel like those were the seeds of countryism, of like, I don't fit in, I'm a fish out of water, I'm Mexican and Irish, but I'm in Canada.
maybe to some extent, yes.
You speak French as well?
No, I speak more Spanish than I do French.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So what is your citizenship then?
Oh, I have Canadian citizenship.
You do have Canadian citizenship. You don't get automatic Irish citizenship?
Well, I could have, but I had to do it by a certain age, and I'm 107 now, so I'm way past my age for that.
So when you're in Nashville, are you performing every night, or is that where you go to?
That's where I go to relax.
Oh, okay.
We do Nashville on our tours. Like it's a stop on the tour, but I don't really play as much because I'm touring so much. So I'm very rarely there, to be honest.
Well, have you seen a lot of America at this point?
Yes.
So what is your favorite thing to do when you roll into it? Are you fly everywhere or do you
oh, no.
Buy a bus?
I wish I had the money for that. No, we drive in a hoarder's van. Our van, we call it the hoarder's van right now because it's just packed to the brim and there's no place to put your feet. It's really gross van.
Oh, yeah. You're living the life, the dream. That's the dream.
Oh, yeah. It's the dream, all right.
I'm telling you, though, when you start making bazillions of dollars and you have fancy, like, you know, Loretta Lynn-style tour buses, you'll be bored. Like, it'll be comfortable the first time, but I promise you, you'll look back and go, oh, I miss that van, that shitty van where there was no room. Everyone's got their own bus, you know. Like, now, you're really creating a bonding experience and a community.
It is, actually. It's a lot of fun.
Who do you find are the main who's coming to your shows the most? Do you notice any consistencies in your audience?
Well, it changes. It depends where we're at. Sometimes it's a lot of like older men, and then sometimes it's like a lot of Social D fans because I opened for Social Distortion.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did a few tours opening for them, and so their fans have been really great. Like the punk scene has been really accepting for what I do, and they've come out. So a lot of tattooed and rockabilly kind of dudes and girls, and it's great.
Oh, that's really cool. What do you think the crossover is? Like, what do you think the crossover appeal is?
I think it's mainly because I think those kinds of fans believe in people that have a lot of conviction, and I have a lot of conviction in what I do, even though it's not really in one particular laneway or genre. I guess you could say in terms of music, I'm a bit of an outsider. I don't really fit anywhere. So the punk world, I guess, is happy to accept people that don't really fit anywhere. And I think they also like the fact that, you know, I dress in black. I'm a big fan of Johnny Cash. Play a badass guitar. And, you know, there's an edge to what I do.
Do you think there'll ever come a point where, you know, it's like, so the sort of punk mentality of like, oh, we're always on the outside and we're fringe and we're kind of going against the establishment. And then eventually what happens a lot of times is, you know, a punk band actually becomes big, or they actually do kind of become the establishment. Do you think that's a bad thing? Like, is there a level of success that you're afraid of, or do you not think about that stuff?
I'm not afraid of it. It's just because it's taken me so long to get to where I am now that I feel like I'll always forever have my mentality. I don't think I'll ever get weird about it. You know, I mean, I have a lot of integrity, so I will continue to have it no matter what happens.
What's your dream scenario? Like when you think of, you know, when you're kind of falling asleep at night and you kind of envision like someday, you know, like what is the someday? Is
go
it
go on tour with Willie Nelson and do a duets record with him
in the middle of a tornado?
Yeah, in the middle of a tornado. We'll just do a tour of Tornado Alley.
That's what it is. You're playing. You're singing. You Don't Bring Me Flowers with Willie Nelson on stage, and he's like, thank you, good night, and then you hop in a truck and chase a fucking tornado.
Right.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, it would be awesome.
But that kind of a dream is not, that's not, I mean, with the exception of the tornado chasing, that's not a crazy thing. Like, with what you're doing, someone could see you, he could see you, someone could get a recording or see you on YouTube or whatever, and then the next thing you know, that could happen.
That would be amazing. I hope it does.
How close do you think you are to something like
that?
Oh,
I don't know. I don't know. It's all funny, you know? It's like, it's all connections and, like you said, random things where you hear somebody in a van or something, hear it on the radio where you'd never normally hear it, or somebody plays, you know, your record for somebody, or God, they see you on TV. I was on Nashville, the TV show. I played myself.
Oh, well, that's awesome.
And a lot of people sort of discovered my music just through randomly seeing me on that. So, it's, you never know what little connections are going to work, and who knows.
What's the state of country radio now?
I don't know. I don't listen to it.
Really? Is it too poppy?
It's just, you know, I like vintage sounds. I love old classic ways of recording. I'm not into this auto-tune business and all that stuff. And,
yeah.
I find there's a format, you know, like the whole Music Row aspect of Nashville is there's a certain format that people fit, and the music I like doesn't fit that format.
Do you like how classic, how like... What type of classic country do you like? Are you a Ray Price fan at all?
I don't know too much Ray Price. I'm more like Hank Williams, Johnny Cash, Waylon, Kris Kristofferson. But I've been reading about Ray Price a little bit in the Johnny Cash
biography. Older school. He's older school.
Yeah.
And his songs are so goddamn sad. Like, it is, it's the saddest. I mean, that it was like, it was that style of country music where there would, you know, like there would be like violins in the background. There were strings in the background and everything was like, lay your head down on my pillow. You know, it's like everyone's breaking up and sad that it didn't work out. And it's completely heartbreaking. But if you get a chance, it's phenomenal.
I'll check it out for sure.
Did you like that form, that kind of Waylon Jennings stuff in the 70s where it started to get, like, there was almost a little bit of funk to the country?
Yeah, I mean, it's cool because it's Waylon, you know, but I always will prefer the old classic sound. Like, I love old school Dolly, like The Grass is Blue and everything before that. I'll always love Dolly because she is who she is, and her music has definitely changed, it's just all old school for me. I'm just a truist, I guess.
Have you ever gone down like a Dolly Parton YouTube rabbit hole?
Well, I saw something on YouTube the other day where she was rapping for Queen Latifah.
What?
Yeah. And I was like, oh, it's interesting.
I started going to, it's like seeing in the 80s, you know, like when she would surprise Kenny Rogers on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
And they would be in these like stadiums of just tens of thousands of people. And then, and watching that woman command an audience. And that, and the voice, I don't know. Did you have a natural voice like that, or do you feel like you really honed your voice?
Well, I mean, I've been singing since I was about 16 years old, and I feel like I wasn't singing the way I do now when I was 16. So, I worked hard to be a good singer, and it took a long time. So I can't say I came out of the womb, you know, singing amazingly. But I mean, I didn't know I had a powerful voice until I was trying to get people to shut up and listen to me sing in a bar where people were talking really loudly. And I was like, how am I going to get their attention? And then I just started wailing. And then I realized, man, I can actually, I can hit crazy notes and stuff. And I didn't know that until I was like 22.
Do you do any songs in Spanish?
I've tried. I mean, I don't have any like releases in Spanish, but I can do Besa Me Mucho.
I think a Spanish song and then a tornado song. I'm trying to help you plan the next album.
I think it's great.
I hope that's not.
I'd love to do it with mariachis as well.
I think mariachi.
Yeah, I want to have mariachis on stage with me, a la like Linda Ronstadt, you know.
As a touring artist, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff. You're like, oh, it'd be really great if I could do this, but it's so expensive to... I mean, I'm sure you can really kind of barely break even when you're on the road and you have a bunch of gear and you have to... I don't think people realize, like, what it's like for a touring artist.
No, yeah, we do have a lot of gear. We've decided to call our tour this time around the More Crap Tour because we just decided to bring, like, keyboards and extra guitars. So, and there was a point where we couldn't fit one more thing into our back area of our van. And, you know, me and my guitar player, we both have wrenched our arms and stuff, just like lifting stuff. And so that's not the glamorous side of it, but it's all worth it when we're, you know, playing the shows and there's people there and they're connecting to what we're doing and we're feeling it. And that's what makes everything worth it.
How do you know if a show, like what, how do you know if a show is working? Do you have a good sense of that?
Yeah, usually like there's good hooting and hollering going on. People look like they're having a great time. And you sense that it's like a symbiotic relationship. When they give it to you, you give it back and it becomes a better show, you know, for everybody.
If they don't, do you kind of go internal and just go, okay, I just have to get through this? Or do you feel, do you essentially try to grab them by the lapel?
Well, I have times where if I feel like nobody's paying attention or it's not, you know, getting the attention I think it deserves, I will have a tendency to be more like in your face about it. But I mean, we've been so lucky. We have great people coming out to the shows, so we don't really come by that too often. I think one of the issues we come by every once in a while is when we have weird monitor sounds, like, because this, when you tour, you have like monitors so you can hear yourself, and sometimes they're all like old and muffly and like really bottom endy, and you sound like you're singing through a tin can in the bottom of the ocean, and it makes it difficult to hear yourself, and that kind of affects how you perform sometimes, because you just don't hear yourself properly, and so that happens every once in a while, but people don't know that stuff. But
yeah. Maybe not, but I think sometimes that the hindrances are actually like what can make a show special.
Oh, I mean, my guitar player always says to me, you're only as good as your last show, and it's always a good way for like raising the bar for the next show, and it's always good and humbling to have experiences where shows don't go awesome, because it just shows you what you can improve on.
Well, I think people tend to remember the shows more. Like, if you know the shows that go perfectly, you go, oh, that was great. Actually, that went the way it was supposed to go. But I think you always remember the shows where you go, yeah, we had to knock a guy off the stage, and the one monitor, we had to run an extension cord to the next building so that we could play, and, you know, nothing worked right, but we still managed to make it work.
Yeah, you're right. Those ones are the most memorable.
What are some of your favorite cities to tour in the States?
I love New Orleans. It's one of my favorite. It's just, there's this kind of spooky vibe to it that really calls to me, and I love the architecture, and I love being close to the swamp. I filmed a music video in the swamp, and I loved every second of it, so that's one of my favorite. I love touring Texas just because everybody's hooting and hollering out there, and
sure,
they're a nice, loud, fun audience. And gosh, where else? Oh, I don't know. It's always fun. LA's fun. San Francisco was fun yesterday.
Is LA fun?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
I always feel like L.A. is not great for bands sometimes, because I feel like it's, there definitely is a music scene here in Los Angeles, but I always feel like it's so, everything's so spread out, you know, that I never think I should go see music in Los Angeles. And I go, oh, it's L.A., you know, but if I'm in another city, if I'm in New York or if I'm in Nashville or whatever, right. I think, oh, we could probably go see some music. But I wonder sometimes if, because there are so many industry people in Los Angeles, if it makes it kind of not a great place to perform, because it's, the audiences are just, they're just different than other places.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I played here, I kind of felt that sort of industry vibe thing, but I mean, I've had a couple great shows at the Hotel Cafe, which is a nice little scene there, so that's been a lot of fun. So I can only speak from my own experiences, I don't know, but and hopefully tonight will go awesome.
Oh, tonight's going to be great. You're playing at the Mint, which
yes.
The Mint is fantastic. I had some friends of mine, it was sort of an alternative bluegrass band called the Cousin Lovers, and they were phenomenal. The Cousin Lovers, yeah, but they were phenomenal. And in addition to writing amazing bluegrass music with kind of weirdly contemporary themes, also they would bust out in the middle of the set a bluegrass version of the America's Funniest Home Video theme. Like, they were a really, really, really great band. But the Mint has a lot of history, and it even just the vibe of that room is like, I so see you in the middle of that. It seems like it fits your vibe really well.
Yeah, I played there once a while ago, a long time ago, and it is a very cool room. And I love that there's a Johnny Cash painting right beside the sound man's shoulder. So every time I look at him, I can see Johnny Cash.
What was it that, when you think of Johnny Cash, what do you see? Like, what is it that, how do you define him?
He's somebody who I'd like to model my career after in terms of, I think he's so much more than a country singer. Everybody respects him from every genre, from hip hop to metal to punk to country to folk roots. Everybody loves Johnny Cash, and he was just able to be transcending. And I think it was because he was such a trailblazer and such an individual and so unique, had a unique voice. And it was just a good thing that Sam Phillips at Sun Records, you know, discovered that in him and helped him develop that amazingness. And just him just doing his own thing and sticking to his guns and going out there and recording a record at Folsom, which was a wild idea. But he wanted to do it, even though his label was like, no, no. And he said, well, I'm going to do it, and you can put it out if you want to, but I'm doing this. And I love everything from his songwriting to his voice to the way he conducted himself business-wise.
Now, do you feel like you have a fulsome idea, which is something that you really want
to? I've brought it up. I mean, I wouldn't mind going to correctional facilities.
Well, not that one specifically, but do you have like some sort of an idea that's super, you know, groundbreaking or just or something that's very personal to you that normally someone would go, I don't know if you should do that, and you go, no, I really need to do this.
Well, I don't know. Maybe nothing groundbreaking like that, but I'm always coming up with crazy, crazy ideas. So I hope to follow through with all of them. I want to write a book of short stories, and they're all about like just weird things, like amputees falling in love, and like and then like a person that runs a morgue and falls in love with a dead body, and all this like weird stuff. And I want to have a song for every short story, so like 6 short stories and then song to follow up, and then put it together as like an EP/short story book.
That's a fantastic idea. When is this going to happen?
Whenever I get some time off.
Are you good at taking time off?
No.
I know, I'm not either.
No.
Do you feel like there are trails left to blaze? Do you feel like, when you talk about Johnny Cash, you know, he was, part of what he had was sort of being on the forefront of kind of a revolution in music.
Yeah.
He had a bit of timing on his side, too. Do you feel like now there are still trails left to blaze?
Only in one respect, and I would think that that would be the state of country music radio, given what it is now, I don't feel is a level playing field. And I think there are artists that are coming up now that are demanding attention, and they are getting that attention, and I think it's just a matter of time before the playing field becomes a little bit more equal, and it's not just whatever fits, whatever's formulaic and formatted to fit for mainstream country radio, but also, you know, people that are doing more roots here, classic stuff, is not going to be relegated to just Americana or alt country, but will be allowed to be called country as well, and be thought of in the same respect, and I hope that happens. I mean, the only sad thing is like, people are doing it. Casey Musgraves is an example, but you talk to people about her, and oftentimes it's referred to as an anomaly in radio. It's like, yeah, she's doing it, but she's kind of an anomaly. And it's like, I you know, look for the day, and hopefully people will be trailblazing that, where it's no longer an anomaly and it's an accepted form, and it can exist alongside people that are doing new country.
That's fantastic. And finally, before you play a song, what is your perfect Sunday? What's your perfect day off?
A bottle of red wine, Merlot, my record player with some Lead Belly or Sunhouse spinning, and dancing with myself with candles in the living room.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I really hope that you... I'll tell you this. I have access to media funds, and if you ever decide to write the tornado song, I would love to produce the video for it, because I'm telling you, there is a whole audience of nerdy folk that if you sang a really soulful, sciencey song about tornadoes, I'm not kidding when I say I think it would be huge.
Well, I'm in love with storm chasing and tornadoes, so it's not, you don't need to sell me on it. I will do it. I will absolutely do it.
Do you keep a copy of Twister with you,
you know,
at all times?
It's not scientifically accurate, that. So I can't get behind Twister for a lot of reasons. It's fine for Hollywood. It's good for entertaining, but it's not scientific.
It's a little bit of a fairy tale.
Yeah, exactly.
So what you guys are, I know you're playing at the Mint tonight, so we have to let you go in a minute, but what song are you going to play?
Waiting on My Luck to Change.
Okay, and do you want to say anything about the song?
Well, the song was inspired by... I have to learn how to talk again. The song was inspired by constantly touring and taking lots of flights. And I realized while I was flying that no matter how crappy and horrible the weather was on the ground, once you got above the clouds, it was always sunny. And I thought that was a good metaphor for people that were down on their luck.
That is fantastic. Okay, Lindy Ortega, we will now, I don't know how to transition over to this. Play the song! Thank you.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist for a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and $55 of free postage. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.